So Far From Home, The Diary of Mary Driscoll, An Irish Mill Girl, by Barry Denenberg, pages 24 through 43. Sunday, May 19th, 1847, at sea. The O'Donnells have been kind enough to share their food with me. Today we had butter and bread. If it were not for them, I would be hungry most of the time. My hard-boiled eggs and the oatmeal cakes are already gone. I was unable to get any tea for the oatmeal cakes and had to eat them as brittle as they were. The ship's crew provides little to eat besides these awful biscuits. Tonight the O'Donnells cooked a stew with the Kirkorans. Everyone eats from the same kettle. The rolling of the boat caused the kettle to sway. The stew spilled over the sides and put out the fire. Thankfully, I do not suffer from seasickness, like so many around me. The Kirkorans have two pretty thin girls, Molly and Sophie, and Brendan, who is 9. I asked Mrs. Kirkoran how old the twins were, and they shouted, "Guess!" I pretended to give the question great consideration. 3, I said, and they shook their heads, delighted that they had fooled me on my first guess. Again I appeared lost in thought. 2? This caused even greater delight. 'Twas true I was going off track, leaving them no choice but to tell me. They looked at each other, deciding who would tell. 7, Molly said. "My, my," I said. "I have never met twins that old, never in all my days." "I'm the oldest," Molly said proudly. The whole while, Brendan kept his distance. He doesn't trust me, that one. But that's just because I'm a girl. Mrs. Kirkoran is fine company. She is lovely to talk to and spends most of her time watching the children. Mr. Kirkoran reminds me of Da, smoking his pipe and keeping to himself. When the weather is fair, he plays cards on deck. Tuesday, May 11th, 1847, at sea. I went up with the Kirkorans this morning to have water pumped into our cans from the large barrels on deck. 'Tis barely enough to satisfy our thirst, and there is hardly any left for cooking. We save the cooking water and use it to wash. One of the barrels leaked, and another was undrinkable because it once held vinegar. 'Tis a shame, because there is not enough to waste. There are only 2 privates for all of us. There are only 2 privies for all of us. Both are above deck at the front of the ship. 'Tis impossible to use them without becoming soaked from the wind and the spray. Worse than the long wait and the drenching are the rats that are always lurking about. Mrs. O'Donnell tells me to make as much noise as possible in order to scare them off. I do, but they don't seem to be too afraid. Many take care of this. Below decks, there is a constant foul odor down there. In good weather, the main decks are so crowded during the day that 'tis difficult to find a place to stand. Mrs. O'Donnell has offered me the use of their chamber pot. She is so kind to watch over me. She showed me how to keep it clean. Once a day now, I go up on deck, tie the chamber pot to a rope, and empty it over the side. Then I dip it into the ocean and pull it back up by the rope. Glad I am to be a help in some way. The twins have taken a liking to me. I tell them a story every morning now. It helps pass the time. They are more easily entertained than Brendan. The wee girls, especially Molly, are bolder than their brother. He is timid as a fawn, that one. This morning we played hide-and-seek. The girls raced down the cluttered aisles and found many clever places to hide. When I found them, they shrieked with joy. But I never could find Brendan's hiding place. He only came out after I had given up. Mrs. Kirkoran thanked me for playing with the children. She said that this sorrowful voyage is hardest on them. I think so, too. There is nothing to occupy their time, and much that is bewildering. Wednesday, May 12th, 1847, at sea. A violent gale began 2 days ago. The ship has been rolling awfully ever since. The wind whips around, and the storm-tossed sea bursts upon the decks with terrible force. The waves are so fierce that they rush down into the lower decks. Everything is closed off below to keep the water out. I expect at any moment for the ship to cave in, sending us to the bottom of the salt sea ocean. 'Tis like a dark, airless dungeon down here. Lord knows I am frightened, but I do my best to hide my fears so the children won't be any worse for it. Last night I could hear Brendan crying out my name. The Corcoran's sleeping berth is not far from mine. I made my way to him as best I could. 'Twas so dark. I tripped over people who shouted angrily at me. I whispered Brendan as loud as I dared. Finally I heard, "Mary, over here." "Poor boy," he says. "Poor boy." He says he wants to go home. I explain that he is going to a new home, a better home, but he was having none of it. "Why," he cried, can't we go to my old home? What's the matter with my old home?" Then he buried his head in my lap and cried himself to sleep while I sang to him softly. On the wings of the night, may your fury be crossed. May no one that's dear to our island be lost. Blow the winds gently, calm be the foam. Shine the light brightly to guide them back home. Thursday, May 13th, 1847, at sea. 3 days now I have been forced to stay below because of the storm. I was kept awake by Mr. O'Donnell, who is suffering from the ship fever. He moans day and night and cries out for water. I made my way slowly over to their berth and asked Mrs. O'Donnell if there was anything I could do. She shook her head and squeezed my hand. I stayed with her for a bit, both of us silent. After a while, I could stay down there no longer and went above. The wind had stopped, though 'twas still raining and fast as it could. I crawled under a sail that lay on deck, hoping 'twould protect me. After a time, I felt another leg touching mine. 'Twas a boy older than me, to be sure, but there was barely enough light to see. I couldn't tell if his eyes were open or closed. Didn't I think that he was sleeping or just keeping still? I prayed he wasn't dead. We stayed like that for the longest time. I dared not move or make a sound. I hardly took a breath. Finally he spoke. "I'm Sean Riordan," said he, as if that were something to be proud of. I told him my name, then silence. The rain had stopped. He said we should come out from under the sail, now that the storm had passed. He had a cheerful voice. He showed me how to stretch the sail so we could catch the rainwater in a water can. Moved like a cat, he did, cautiously. "I'm going to find work in America," he said. His uncle Patrick Quinn sent the money for his ticket. He had been living in Boston for 5 years now. He owns a tavern. I told Sean about Aunt Nora and my plans to work in the mills. "Do they hire Irish?" he asked. I must have made a queer face. "Some places don't hire Irish, you know," he said. Sean said that someday he would like to be rich. "What would I do if I were rich?" he was asking. "I would bring Ma and Da to America," I told him. "And then," he went on, "what would you do then?" I told him I would live in a big house on a cliff overlooking the ocean, and I would spend my days watching the waves come in while the seals sunned themselves on the rocks. "And you?" I asked. He thought carefully and looked away before talking. He said he would bring everyone from Ireland to America. That would leave the English with what they deserve, a country with no people. Suddenly, I felt cold. "I must be off," I said. I had been away too long. I had to go to below and see how Mr. O'Donnell was faring. Sean wanted to lend a hand, but I said no. I thought it was best I go alone. Monday, May 17th, 1847, at sea. Mr. O'Donnell is still feverish. I sat with Mrs. O'Donnell while she wiped his damp brow with a cloth. He sleeps most of the day, thank the Lord. Mrs. O'Donnell is knitting a sweater for her daughter, whom they haven't seen in 2 years. She's living with a family in Boston, Mrs. O'Donnell says. 'Twas best for the child. 'Tis certain she misses Alice greatly. I think that this is why she has been so kind to me. She said it must have been hard for Ma to let me go to America. 'Tis hard for all the mothers, she said. The O'Donnells are eager to see their daughter again. We will make it all up to her then, she said. Though I am not sure of her meaning. She went up for some time. Mrs. O'Donnell says I am very patient for a wee girl. I suppose I am. I like listening to people, if that's what she means by patient. Besides, I told her, I'm not a wee girl. I'm 14. Wednesday, May 19th, 1847, at sea. I can't write down below. 'Tis too dark, and I can find no peace. At least on deck 'tis light. There are times during the night when I awake with the shivers and can't breathe, There is no air, and it feels like there is a heavy weight sitting on my chest. When that happens, I can never go back to sleep. Thursday, May 20th, 1847, at sea. Mr. O'Donnell is worse each day. God bless him, there is no doctor on board. No one to turn to for help. Friday, May 21st, 1847, at sea. Each morning when I hear Molly and Sophie coming, I pretend I am still sleeping. They scream and jump in my berth to wake me. They are the first twins I have ever known. Just because they look alike, you think they would be alike, but they are not. Sophie is quiet and serious and doesn't like to be away from her ma. Molly is more playful than her sister. Being with them helps with the boredom of the voyage and brings me the deepest joy. Monday, May 24th, 1847, at sea. I am tired. I fear I might fall over my own shadow. I can barely walk without stopping to catch my breath. When Molly and Sophie came to wake me this morning, they brought the bouncing balls Sean had found for them. But I couldn't play. I was too weak to even tell them a story. Sadly, I had to send them back to Mrs. Kerkoran. Sean came to see me, but I sent him away too. Wednesday, May 26th, 1847, at sea. I am dizzy. 'Tis a trial, I thought. 'Twas because of my hunger. This morning, the dizziness was so bad I couldn't walk. My body is on fire. My throat is sore and my lips dry and cracked. I fear I have gotten the ship fever. First Mr. O'Donnell, and now will it take me too? 'Twas nothing anyone could do for him. None of the crew is any help. Sean is right. They care nothing for us. Mrs. O'Donnell is overcome with grief. She is not feeling well herself at all. She asked me to go with Mr. O'Donnell when they put him out to sea. She did not want him to be alone. Mrs. Kerkoran and the children are staying below. I did as she asked, although, if truth be told, I was weak as a kitten. I was afraid. Sean came with me. We stood by as the crewmen wrapped Mr. O'Donnell in an old canvas sailcloth. They placed a great stone at his feet and sewed up the sailcloth. The ship's bells were tolling as he was slipped overboard into the sea. I said a prayer for him before returning to my berth at sea. At times, I don't know if 'tis day or night down here. I sleep so poorly. There is little light from the one swinging lantern. 'Tis nearly impossible to write. At sea, the awful creaking of the timbers all night long. By my faith, maybe I won't live to see America. Maybe Aunt Nora is wrong. 'Tis a long voyage, and I feel so far from home. Monday, May 31st, 1847, at sea. I miss the children, Sean says. They are asking why they can't see me. They want to know when I'll be better. Tuesday, June 1st, 1847, at sea. Sean brought me some tea and a slice of bread with sugar on top. 'Tis a miracle because there is little food left and no tea. But a friend of Sean's uncle gave him some whiskey before he departed. To be sure, it has come in handy. Sean traded the whiskey for the tea and bread. Said the cook was most happy with the trade, thinking he had gotten the better of the deal. I laughed. I can't remember the last time I laughed. Friday, June 4th, 1847, at sea. Merciful Son of God, I have been spared. My fever has passed. Sean said he feared I would not recover. The Holy Ghost looks after me, I told him. We all went up on deck where Sean played his fiddle. Sophie, Molly, and Brendan held hands and danced round and round while Mr. and Mrs. Kerkoran clapped. Two of the sailors were tapping their feet as they mended the sails and tarred the ropes. 'Twas raining lightly, and Mr. Kerkoran put his pipe upside down to keep it dry, just like Da. Monday, June 7th, 1847, at sea. The good Lord God took Mrs. O'Donnell today. 'Twas the ship fever. Once Mr. O'Donnell died, she seemed to give up all hope. I told Sean that somehow I had to find Alice O'Donnell, and when we arrived in Boston, the O'Donnells looked after me like I was their own. I must repay their kindness. I can't bear the thought that the poor child will never see them again. She must know all they went through to be with her. 'Twas so sad it made me cry. Something I never do. I don't like to cry. Tuesday, June 8th, 1847, at sea. There's a man selling dolls. How I wished we were able to get one for Molly and Sophie. 'Twould so help make their time pass more pleasantly. Wednesday, June 9th, 1847, at sea. Sean came to see us this morning. He had something behind his back and a big grin on his face. The twins knew whatever he had was for them. They tried to see what it might be while Sean twisted this way and that. Molly and Sophie squealed with delight, and Sean finally gave them the doll. I dare not ask where he got it. Today, Brendan said that Sean is going to teach him how to whistle. Thursday, June 10th, 1847, at sea. The weather was fair today, and the captain allowed the lines to be strung between the masts. I helped Mrs. Kirkcorn with the wash. We had to use seawater, which gives no suds. We did the best we could, beating the clothes against the decks. Mrs. Kirkcorn told me to be sure to shake them out once, Mrs. Kirkcorn told me to be sure to shake them out once they were dry. This is to rid of the salt from the seawater. She said they would burn our skin if we didn't. Friday, June 11th, 1847, at sea. Mr. Kirkcorn was beat by one of the crew 2 days ago. He lies in his berth all day and isn't speaking. No one knows what happened. Sunday, June 13th, 1847, at sea. Sean heard one of the crew talking about Mr. Kirkcorn. He was found smoking his pipe below decks. Sean says the crewman talked about a fire aboard another ship earlier this year. The fire was put out and the ship returned to Cork. No one was hurt. 'Twas started by someone smoking in his berth, just like Mr. Kirkcorn. There have been reports of fires on other ships bound for America, ships that were lost at sea with everyone perishing. I am sorry for Mr. Kirkcorn, but not sorry for his smoking below decks has stopped. Imagine the whole lot of us sinking because Mr. Kirkcorn was smoking his pipe. Tuesday, June 15th, 1847, at sea. Sean put aside water so that we can wash before we reach Boston. We barely have enough to drink down to a cup a day. We are, so it seems foolish to worry about washing. But Sean says his uncle warned him that your troubles are not over once you've reached harbor. If the authorities think you are ill, they will place you in a quarantine, or worse, send you back to Ireland. The thought of being returned to Ireland after all this time and all I've been through is more than I can bear. Thursday, June 17th, 1847, at sea. There is talk we are nearing land. Many of the passengers are buying tickets for the lottery. They are trying to see who can guess when land will be sighted. A ticket is sold for each hour of the day. Those who have the tickets for days past try to buy tickets for upcoming days. Tickets for daylight hours fetch the highest price, especially the early morning hours, when land is most likely to be spotted. Whoever has the winning tickets gets all the money.